AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.
Is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
On July 6, 2024, a woman named Sonia Massey did what any of us might do if we thought someone was lurking outside her home. She called 911 for help. But instead of safety, what walked through her front door was tragedy. Moments later, Sonia was dead, shot by the very deputy who came to protect her, and I'll put protect in air quotes for those of you listening on the podcast platforms. Now, more than a year later, the former county deputy, Sean Grayson, has been found guilty of second-degree murder in her death, a verdict that raises many questions as it answers. We are digging deep into this, and who else better to help us dig deep into it than defense attorney and host of Defense Diaries, Bob Mata. We're going to talk about how this system meant to serve and protect instead failed at nearly every turn in this case, and we're going to figure out what the hell went wrong, or if the system, it's just kind of working as directed, working under the confines of the wheels and the tracks that are already laid for it. Bob, welcome.
This
is another crazy one. We've all seen the video. We're not going to play it again. So if anybody's triggered, don't worry. We're not going to do that. This is one where we got the verdict just the other week. What was your reaction to finding out second degree murder on this?
I was outraged. I thought that, because the way that this thing went down was he was only charged with first degree.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he was never indicted on second degree, but second degree is a lesser included offense in Illinois. This one happened in my neck of the woods. And, ultimately the jury, in what I feel was a compromise verdict, ultimately landed on second degree. And, and when I say a compromise verdict, that means that ultimately I have a feeling that there was a little bit of a divide in the jury room with mm-hmm. maybe one or two people in terms of wanting to convict him on the first degree. I think that mm-hmm. there were probably a couple of holdouts that were like, well, she lifted up the pot. She lifted up the pot. Mm-hmm. And, he had to do what he had to do type shit. And ultimately they end up landing on second degree, which carries a much less severe penalty. The range goes from anywhere from 4 years to 20 years on that. But the thing that is most disconcerting about it is the fact that the guy can actually get probation, meaning that they could say, all right, judge says, I'm going to sentence you to 4 years, but I'm not going to put you in. I'm going to put you on reporting probation. And, so provided you don't screw up, you're not going in. So, I mean, that could happen. Like the guy could be given probation. Which when you look at this thing, and I'm glad we're not showing the video because it is a very triggering video.
It's disturbing.
It's fucked up,
Yeah. And let's kind of walk through for people who don't know what happened here, essentially, and step in if I'm misstating anything. She calls the police. She thinks there might be somebody outside her home. She's concerned. Maybe it's a burglar. Maybe you don't know, but you're concerned. So you call 911. They show up. We've seen the body cam footage in its entirety. It's like 18 minutes if you watch the whole thing. And it starts out a fairly, you know, civil interaction. She does seem a little elusive at first. You know, I don't know what's going on with her exactly, but I don't know. I mean, how would you describe, in your view, what the heck's going on there in terms of when they start interacting with her, her hesitance to really say much of what's going on? You know, she didn't seem like she was quite there. In no way am I sticking up for shooting her. I'm just trying to determine, was there probably a mental health emergency going on or something, do you think?
Yeah, there was unequivocally a mental health thing going on with her.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it came out that her her mother had made a call in a couple of days prior because she was having an episode. She's suffering from some kind of mental illness to the point where she ends up, and I'm talking about Sonia herself, checks herself in. Mm-hmm. The day before into a 30-day to kind of figure out what's going on with her. She's either having paranoia. You know, and when the mother had called law enforcement to let them know that they were going to, you know, that she was going to be going in, and she says this thing that is in retrospect very kind of haunting, in the sense that she says, you know, please don't hurt her. Please don't hurt her. She's going through some mental health issues.
They're warned. They're told.
Right, right.
She's going through mental health issues.
They are absolutely, like, whether or not these two guys are made aware of the fact, but when you watch the lengthy video, you watch the lengthier video, and they've got his partner going out there, and he says something about it seems like it was a 1096, which is she's got some kind of mental distress going on. You know that they could tell just by the way that she was acting that she was having some kind of an issue. And, you know, because like when they first come to the door, she's acting straight. First of all, it takes her a long, long time to answer the door. Right.
Yes.
You got this cop. So the cop, Grayson's already irritated by the fact that he's standing out there for 2 or 3 minutes waiting for her to open the door. It's like, what took you so long to open the door? You know, she's like, well, I was getting dressed. And, you know, I mean, so ultimately, you know, this weird interaction takes place, you know, and she starts, you know, she can hear her when they're at the front door, you know, saying some things like, you know, God help me, God help me.
There's a lot of religiosity being thrown into.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, you know, they start asking questions about the car in the driveway. Whose is that? You know, and she gives some kind of strange answer initially. And then ultimately, when his partner goes to walk down the driveway to look, you can still see on his body cam that Grayson's still at the door. So we don't, and we, as we know, Grayson doesn't have his body-worn cam on at that time. Mm-hmm. He doesn't turn it on until after the shooting occurs, and then he flips it on. So the partner is walking down, and you can see Grayson go into the house.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, I don't know if he just barged his way in or if she invited him in terms of him coming into the home, because that thing was so close to being over.
Yeah.
You know, once they checked out the perimeter of the house, or like, there's nothing out here.
Yeah. Cause you almost think this is it. Like what more can possibly happen here?
Right. Right. So ultimately, you know, I mean, he ends up in the house, you know, she's sitting down, she's trying to find paperwork, and, you know, and she's trying to find the stuff to where she was, you know, hospitalized, that she went in with the mental health issues. And, you know, I mean, the bottom line is that there had been 3 911 calls made by or on behalf of Sonia. Her mother had actually called them and specifically said that her daughter was experiencing a mental breakdown, and then pleaded with them. Like, this is part of the, this is the record. It's a 911 call. He says, I don't want you guys to hurt her. So it's like, there's this premonition that, you know, that this is how these things get dealt with by cops who are not trained to handle mental health issues when they go.
Yeah. Let me interrupt you for just a second here. So we know that she has a previous mental health history, and I've sat in a dispatch area before. I'm not sure if things are flagged like this address. We've got somebody here with a mental illness or something. But knowing that the mother said this, and again, we don't know if the officers knew that there was a mental health crisis going on here. But let's just say they did know.
Yeah.
Couldn't they, instead of going in with, you know, firearms out, how about the stun gun?
Well, that's what Allison, we did a live on this the other night where, as you can imagine, Allison and I were raging.
Right.
But I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, like, why aren't you pulling out the stun gun? You know, mm-hmm. like, why?
Yeah, why deadly force?
Mace, exactly. Pepper spray, something. I mean,
anything other than something that would kill her and eliminate her from this earth.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and I mean, that's the $1 million question. I mean, to me, that's always the question. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so, why are we defaulting? Why are these cops defaulting to killing people as opposed to, you know, using the stun gun and, you know, like dropping them right there and you're not ending up murdering somebody?
I think the answer is quite simple, because the system is working as it's been created. We're putting unqualified people into positions where they have to essentially be a mental health professional with zero mental health training.
Yeah.
And expecting them to react in a way that doesn't end tragically.
Yeah.
And that, I think, at the end of the day is this. I mean, and this officer, and we can go in a little bit, obviously already checked the boxes of, I don't have very good emotional regulation. I don't make good decisions. I've been fired this place. I've had to resign here. I've been discharged. I mean, the list goes on and on. The guy's not good at assessing situations and handling them in any way, shape, or form that seems to make any sort of sense, that de-escalates. Yeah. We can get into that again, like I said, in a little bit. But again, it's working as designed. When you put people into positions that are not qualified or trained to handle them properly, shit's going to go bad.
Yeah.
And it doesn't excuse it, right. But it's, why is anyone surprised?
The gun is so easy to pull out and use. And that's what concerns me. In some of the martial arts classes that I'm in, there are some police officers who are present. They are learning so that they can de-escalate a situation manually before they have to pull out their weapon. They've got it handy and boy, they can get to it, but they try other things first. And that's just where I am. I don't know how things were working in this area, but it seems a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction to go, oh, pull the gun, shoot, done.
Yeah. Well,
case closed.
No question about it. No question about it.
That's what we have all the time though.
I mean, that's how they're trained. And look, the reality is, you know, cops have a tough job.
Yeah.
Yep, they absolutely do.
It's a dangerous, thankless job. They're out there, you know, with all the shit that's been going down in the last decade. You know, I would not say that the police are beloved per se in general. It's not to say that people who have husbands and spouses that are cops, that, you know, obviously they love them. And I love good cops. I love good cops. The problem is that when you have that much power that is being given to an individual, and I'm talking about that badge and that gun, which is so much power that you can change the course of somebody's life, not even necessarily just killing them, arresting somebody because you're in a shit mood because they've irritated you, and then you say, oh, you know what, they grabbed my wrist, that's aggravated battery on a police officer, that's in Illinois a class 4 felony. They have so much power to alter people's lives that it is incumbent upon everybody that is in a position to hire these people, that the psychological evaluations that are done on these people is so thorough that we know exactly who we're getting into these jobs. And the problem is they're underpaid.
Yep.
You know, you're not going to be getting the best of the best. Mm-hmm. You know, the best of the best are going to say, oh, you know, I went to Harvard or I went to Yale and I want to get into law enforcement. I'm going to the feds. Mm-hmm. You know, they pay better. It's a more prestigious job. I don't want to be out on the streets doing that. So you've got all of these issues that are going on in terms of the hiring process, wherein once they're out there and they have that power, and if they haven't really evaluated them properly so that you don't know who you're putting out on the streets, it is a very dangerous proposition, because you were talking about people that are going to be experiencing heated events a lot. And if they're a person that cannot handle that kind of event in any way, shape, or form, and they're not trained properly to de-escalate, or if they have a bias, if they're a person that walks down the street and are like, oh, you know, there's a person with black skin, I'm going to cross the other side of the street. But if they saw a person walking, you know, towards them, a person with white skin, they wouldn't. So they have that kind of like little bias just kind of floating in their mind, you know, that it's not necessarily racism, but it's just a bias. Mm-hmm. Like, those people can't be hired to be cops. You know, there's the psychological side of testing that needs to be completely overhauled is where it has to start. It has
to be. We don't.
I know.
We don't. We know what the problems are here. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not, well, there's some bad apples. No, it's not. It's we're setting everyone up to fail. And you're making bad apples nuclear bombs, essentially, is what you're doing.
Yeah.
You can have a great cop that, and I'm not saying this guy is a great, so I don't want me to construe that, but you can have a great cop that can make a bad decision because of lack of training and lack of experience and lack of being set. And anyone put in any position, if you are not training them and then saying, here, go, like, we don't put therapists and qualify therapists to help people if they have no training in therapy, unless you're in Utah, then it's a different story. You can basically, the Mormon church says you're good. I'm kidding. Yeah. Anyway, but no, that's the thing. We don't do this in other areas. Why are we doing this here? I mean, 99% of the job is psychological. It's right. Dealing with mental health problems of people, which is why they're in the position of needing to call 911 because something horrible happened. Somebody made a bad choice. Some sort of accident happened. And it comes back to mental health. And that's a majority of the problems and the calls and the reasons. And we do nothing to train them. I'm sure there's some lovely department out there, or maybe a handful that do, but that will come down to budget. That will come down to who's qualified to take these positions. And what we have here in this case was Sean Grayson here, who was let go from other policing jobs, resigned. Six agencies in 4 years.
Yeah,
clearly,
that's a problem.
Not great. But because, I'm going to assume here, because they needed a body in that position, they needed to fill that quota. We need somebody here to hit this beat and to be able to do the job. We're basically going to hire anybody that can remotely fill that void, and that's what they did. And when you hire bodies when you hire people just to fill that body space that you need, you end up with body counts.
Yep.
And that's what they got.
Yep.
And yet, this is everywhere. This is almost every department in the United States. Why can't we fix this? Where would it start to fix this?
We have a great comment. Pardon my interruption, but it's exactly what you're talking about. There is no mental health to care for these people, period. This is from Philip Murphy. So police are spending far too much time dealing with this, sad as it is, period. We need mental health available. I'm a nurse and have seen this far too often. They go to emergency and back on the street with family unable to deal with them, then back to emergency, revolving door with no care. I saw this as an EMT back in 2016. People where they're hallucinating, they're seeing things, take them to emergency. And then 2 days later, we get the same call. They're back. They're back home doing exactly the same thing. Nothing happened. They went to emergency. They were dealt with for the day and then released, and there's nothing you can do. They just keep calling. They are repeat offenders.
It's just a cycle. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No. It's a spot on comment. You know, and from the defense attorney's perspective, I'm on the front lines of it far more than, you know, the prosecutors are, because like I'm dealing with the folks, and it was for the 2 decades plus that I was trying cases and handling these cases in court and trying to go in and have discussions with these prosecutors to make them understand that almost everything that is walking through those doors is either related to either addiction and or mental health issues or both, combination of both. And to have them simply not recognize that and just ignore that fact was so frustrating. It's a systemic issue.
Yeah.
And we, like, our society is not getting better. Mental health.
No.
We are getting worse and worse and worse. It's like these phones that we're all on, like everything is snowballing to where if you just walk out in any major city, you are going to see, it's like The Walking Dead, where you have people that are just wandering around.
It is
in a state of just mental distress and mental illness that is like coursing through their minds, wherein they cannot tell the difference between reality and what is going on in their mind. There is no way for them to be able to control that. It's a, you know, mental illness isn't treated the way that we treat other injuries. If you break your fucking arm, you go to the hospital. They put a cast on after they take an x-ray. They set the bone. And because we can't see the brain, because you can't see the injury, it doesn't get treated in the same way that all of the other injuries that we always treat. Oh, I'm kind of feeling like shit, you know, around my stomach area. Oh, maybe your appendix is, you know, whatever the case may be, everything else gets treated in a way that is effective. And what's not happening with mental health is it's not getting treated. And to Stacey's point and to our comment there is nothing in place in terms of a system to where these folks that are experiencing incredibly vivid hallucinations of what may be going on in their mind, but it's real to them in real life.
It is.
You know, and like when people don't know how to deal, like including their family members, like forget about the cops, like the people that are closest to them don't know how to deal with it.
Which is why they've called the police in most cases.
And the power is with the ill. The power is with the sick person, the person who has the issue. Because the way that our system is currently set up, that person in most cases needs to be the one that says, I'll get help. I need help.
Right.
And if and more times than not, statistically, that person doesn't think there's anything wrong. And a family member, a loved one, especially someone who's not living with that person, they don't have the authority to go and say, this person needs to be in this hospital. They need to go into a mental health hospital. We don't have that ability anymore. And if they're there, it's a very small hold and then release, because we are not equipped to do this. Everything has been put down to a local jurisdiction level. That's why we don't have state mental hospitals anymore. And that's a whole other conversation of either they're great or they were horrible or somewhere mixed in between. But we've never revisited this idea since they got rid of all of them. And then lo and behold, you have this massive homeless problem and all of these people who are mentally ill on the streets. Gee, I wonder how that happened. And it's been getting worse and worse over the several decades since we got rid of state mental health hospitals. And the reliance was, well, locally they'll deal with it. No, they won't.
If they have any
budget to do so, they're not going to. That's why we have.
How are you dealing with it? Like, what does that mean? The local don't deal with it on the local level.
We're going to put you in this low-income housing over here, maybe, if you can get into it. If not, we're just going to let you wander around the streets talking to your basketball like it's a baby. And
Tony, you just
and we know exactly what we're talking about. And yes, yeah, because we had.
I'm not going to go into great detail, but across from our radio station, we had. I'm not going to say low-income housing, but it was housing for people who had maybe been institutionalized and then released.
Why? Because the institution shut down.
Exactly. Yep. And there wasn't a lot of oversight. So these people would cross the street and come over to the radio station and kind of sit in the parking lot And there just wasn't anything going on for them. There wasn't any structure, nobody watching over them. They were basically on their own and shouldn't have been. And they just congregated in our parking lot. It was very unsettling.
Yeah, that's the personal example I have of seeing that exact thing where the institution's gone. Good luck out on the streets. And yeah, these people were in their delusion land because of their mental illnesses that were going on. And again, we have exactly what you're saying. We don't do anything in our country. We treat it like, oh, just brush it off. Take a little Tussin, walk it off.
Right.
And you'll be good.
Yeah. Rub some dirt on it. Rub some dirt on it. You'll be good. You know, and like we could talk about this for 10 hours.
I know.
But I mean, like another issue with it is, a lot of people that are initially treated and they're able to diagnose, say they have paranoid schizophrenia, and they're given medication. And a prevailing issue is that almost everybody that starts taking the medication, which works, which for things like where they're able to accurately diagnose, because there is, and I was actually just talking to a mental health professional on Saturday night. I had a really lengthy conversation with her, and she's a forensic psychologist nurse. And you know, she was telling me, she's like, look, you know, when they come in, there's an aspect of it where it's a bit of a guessing game in terms of how we try to medicate them, you know, because they're coming in and we're trying to diagnose what we believe is wrong with them in terms of what the DSM may you know, provide us in terms of kind of background, and these are the things that you need to look for. But like, once we diagnose them, and if we find, you know, through, you know, trial and tribulation, what may be working in terms of medication, and then it does work. What happens with a lot of people that are suffering from mental illness, when they're on their meds and they realize that it's working, they think that they've been healed, not realizing that they haven't been healed, that that's not what it does. The medication doesn't heal you. It resolves the issue, but you have to keep taking the meds. And what happens is they get off the meds because they may not necessarily like the way that it makes them feel. In certain
or they
ways.
Feel fine when they're on it. So they think, I don't need
they
it.
Think they're healed.
Yep.
And there's no one there to make sure.
It's a vicious cycle, man. And it's really frustrating.
And there's so many obvious pitfalls as to how this won't work. And it's like, we got to let it happen. No, this is insane. We're letting people just basically kill themselves slowly but surely because we don't want to take responsibility in one way or another.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
The holidays are here, and that means it's the most wonderful time of the year to save with Rakuten. Use Rakuten to stack cash back at your favorite stores on top of holiday sales. That's savings on savings. With Rakuten, you can get cash back on gifts for everyone on your list. From toys for the kids, to kitchen gear for the person who loves to cook, to electronics for everyone. You can even save on something for yourself. Just shop the stores you love, and cash back is automatically added to your account. And you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Join for free today and get a new member bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.